afternoon. You're very welcome to today's edition of Saturday with Claire Byrne. On today's programme, who managed to charm in Carlo last night? Leo and Simon are on the road to Ballinasloe today. We'll see who's winning on the roadshow so far. Unions fire a warning shot at Fine Gael as both leadership candidates vow to get tough with essential workers. And what are the chances of the victor doing a Theresa May and calling a snap general election? Find out with our panel after the news now with John Finnerty. John, thank you very much. This is Saturday with Claire Byrne. You're very welcome to the programme and we'd like to hear from you over the course of the next hour. 51551 is the text number. On email, saturday@rte.ie. The Twitter address at saturdayrte. And quick off the mark was Barry Keane in Cork. He's a Fine Gael man. He says, from 25 years of Fine Gael internal elections, I believe nobody about how they voted unless they show me their secret ballot. Leo's brilliant ambush last weekend almost worked. But after the hustings, the Fine Gael leadership is wide open. And that's a great place to get us started. But before we do, let's introduce our panel. We have Joe McHugh, Fine Gael Minister of State for the Diaspora and International Development. And you're on Team Leo, fair to say. Yeah. Patricia King, Irish Congress of Trade Unions General Secretary. Ruth Coppinger, Solidarity PBP TD. Frank Flannery, former Fine Gael strategist and director of elections. And Niamh Lyons, political editor of the Ireland edition of The Times. Joe, just comment, if you will, on that text we had there from Barry. It's not over until it's over.
Yeah, and I mean, look, as you said, I'm on Leo's team and I have been for a while. And
you were in Carlo last night.
And it was in Carlo last night, yeah. And I deliberately went to Donegal the previous night to get a sort of a sense from my own members. And look, there is a democratic process within the membership now, and they're delighted to have a vote and with two good candidates.
Did anyone give out to you for showing your hand early?
Yeah, I mean, look, there's a debate on that, and I mean, that this is the first time we've tried to do this, and there will be lessons learned from that. But at the same time, there has to be some sort of plan and preparedness, and Leo Varadkar has proved that he had that preparation done.
But do you now, looking at how the hustings are going, do you wish I'd waited? I wish I'd waited. Are you saying that to yourself?
No, I'm not. And I think it's important that people know what's happening. Like, for example, I spoke to my constituency secretary today. Her feedback is there's some people voting for Simon, there's some people voting for Leo, and they're going to get that opportunity on Monday night in Letterkenny to cast their vote. And it's good. It's good for democracy, leaving the Fine Gael side out of it. There's a lot of young people engaging, a lot of people through social media. And I think this is a healthy conversation. And even last night's meeting in Carlow was very, very policy focused. And I think that's healthy. And I certainly believe that, you know, that there is a change and a shift needed in how parties work at a democratic level. And I think we've opened a whole new debate in relation to that.
Niamh Lyons, who won last night in Carlow, do you think?
I think it was another draw. And I'm one of the only people that thought the night before was a draw. But I thought that because Simon Coveney on the first night and a very clear tactic in terms of trying to draw Leo out. He wanted him to make a mistake. He wanted to see that fiery personality, that off-the-cuff, past remarkable person who sometimes says things in the heat of the moment and goes on to regret them later. That didn't work the first night, and he didn't try it on the second night. Now, if anything, I suppose Simon Coveney was sort of preaching to the converted, a former agriculture minister, someone who was very comfortable with a lot of the questions that were coming up. There was a smaller turnout last night, and I believe from my colleague Ellen Coyne, who was in attendance for us, that a lot of the farmers are cutting silage at the moment, and they saw the rain coming in and made the decision that, you know, they have to take one day off to vote. They weren't going to take the second day off to go to the debate. But I'm sure many people tuned in from home. Definitely Leo Varadkar, less comfortable in general being pushed on the agricultural areas, but certainly starting off by referencing the fact that Sean Kelly, the MEP, was in the crowd and kind of really making the links between himself and that cohort. And in general, I mean, when I saw a lot of the people turn out for Leo Varadkar at the beginning, Joe being one of them, another being Sean Kine, I sort of pulled a lot of those guys aside and said, what exactly is it about Leo Varadkar, the Dublin guy, that's appealing to you? And he certainly has been putting in an incredible amount of work on the ground in rural areas. And I suppose that's where he saw his initial weakness coming through. I suppose the other thing to say is I agree with Joe. I think this process has changed the face of how parties will do leadership elections from now on. Fianna Fáil have already moved to a one member, one vote system. Labour already do something similar to this, but have never actually broadcast their hustings before. But I think the next change of leadership we're expecting is obviously in Sinn Féin. And I think they will come under a lot of pressure to have a very open, transparent system like this one. And with a party that looks like they've already preordained their next leader, it'll be difficult to see how they'll manage that process.
Okay, Frank, to come to you, a veteran of these sorts of things, but not of this process.
Not of this sort of thing,
no. This is all very new. Do you think this will have a lasting impact on the party? Will it, because we all know so much about who's going with who. We know Joe was there last night supporting Leo. You know, if it doesn't work out for these people, what happens next?
Yeah, it's very interesting. And if the last time we changed leadership was 2002, summer 2002, and the parliamentary party went into a closed room, and there was an absolute fatwa on the result never being announced. I do think I know what happened in there, but the two people who were in there doing the counting, neither of them broke the confidence in any way. So that was a concept then. The parliamentary party did their business, and then it became like a secret of Fatima. No one else ever. This system.
But I'm sure the contenders know who went with who in that instance.
Well, they would. They would. They would. They would be extraordinarily dumb, naive contenders if they didn't know basically who was working with them or not. But it was quite competitive with four candidates. But like it was a precise system which. I see leading Fine Gael people are now decrying as the worst possible way to do it. It's the exact way Fine Gael did it for its entire life. So this is an entirely new system. Decided in 2002 in a reaction to the disastrous election result the party had then. And it's a big experiment. And you can make all kinds of arguments about it. Why only 10% for the councillors? Why only, say, 25% for the members? Why 65% parliamentary party? All of those whys. They were all debated in 2002. I wouldn't have... I would kind of expect that once this has been done, and I would have thought... just my own personal opinion, enormously successfully done on this occasion. It will be very interesting for the party, and no doubt they will review how it worked, what are the lessons we learned for it, and is it necessary to tweak it for the future? I don't think there'll be any going back from it. But maybe ways they can make it work better.
Okay.
What do I think? I think it's a brilliant system. I think it does need to, I think there will be a good and an interesting review of it. I think having an entire all-party kind of electoral college is a fantastic idea. I think it is important at the end of the day that the leader who is chosen has a majority support in this parliamentary party, because we have that representative system of democracy. Mm-hmm. And they are the people who deliver governance for the party and governance for the country if you are in government.
But I think it needs to work at all levels. The ordinary membership and the councillors could feasibly say, we feel neutered now because the parliamentary party in the main declared, apart from a couple of them, we don't know what their intentions are, but in the main, they seem to have decided this, and unless they start changing their minds, it's all over.
They did, but I think Simon made a good point, and I think not just a point for making a point, but a realistic point when he said, a declaration is not a vote and there are no votes cast yet.
Well, do you think that people will change their minds?
My general feeling is probably unlikely, but when a person goes in to put in that vote, it is a private, secret ballot. Mm. And there's nobody watching you do it except yourself. And unless you do what Bertie Ahern famously did with Albert Reynolds long ago, show him the vote that he's putting in. And that's a rare occasion. And such a vote then is always tended to have.
But he needs six people, doesn't he, to change their mind?
He does. And there's been a lot of spinning from the ministerial side on this. A lot of the ministers saying, well, why shouldn't the grassroots members trust us on this one? This is the ministers that have declared for Leo. You know, we have seen him and Simon Coveney in cabinet for the last 6 years. So why shouldn't our particular perspective on it be respected? But I think what Simon Coveney would probably be hoping for is to win at least one college, and that would be the grassroots members, that 25%. And I think if he managed to do that, he could become the kind of voice of the membership. And if that was the case, and he has been talking about winning over the heart and soul of the party, he would definitely be impossible to overlook for Taoiseach and would probably have the pick of whatever other cabinet ministry that
he wanted. Read that Heather Humphreys was going to be Taoiseach.
Perhaps Heather Humphreys might be deputy leader, that you would have maybe a separate position as Taoiseach, which obviously has happened in the current setup with James Riley as deputy leader and Francis Fitzgerald as Taoiseach. So why not spread the goodies around? That's what a lot of people have seen it. And obviously, Leo Varadkar doesn't have as many people that he can reward the next time round. And he's also been quite restrictive in how he sees a reshuffle taking place. We've obviously asked him whether or not he'll go for a gender balance, a 50-50 gender balance. And I thought it was interesting that he said he couldn't do it because he's inheriting the cabinet. Now, obviously, that's something that a lot of the women who are supporting him so far won't want to hear.
OK, well, we're going to talk to Patricia and Ruth about some of the policy issues we've been hearing about over the course of this leadership campaign. But first, I want to play you a clip. This is from last night. They may be fighting to lead the same party, but both men believe they have very different aspirations for Fine Gael.
Where is Fine Gael's moral compass pointing today? And for me, we have a choice to make there. Do we want to be a party that actually targets certain segments in Irish society to prioritise those people, to get a vote dividend from them? Or are we a party that wants to represent everybody? Are we a party that wants to send out a message that no matter who you are, where you come from, how you grew up, the challenges you face, that we as the largest party and the party of government in this country actually want to listen to what you have to say?
If we try to be all things to all people, I think we risk ending up being nothing. That sort of politics might work for Fianna Fáil. I don't think it's ever going to work for Fine Gael. So saying that you want to represent everyone, but failing to back that up with policies, or by saying what choices you would make, or what priorities you would have, isn't a value system. It's not a moral compass. It's empty rhetoric. And that, in my view, does not constitute leadership.
All right, that's Leo Varadkar and Simon Coveney speaking last night in Carlo. Patricia King, your statement from the Irish Congress of Trade Union said that one of the policy items which was detailed by Leo Varadkar this week was pandering to right-wing elements. And this is the proposal to make Labour Court rulings binding in the cases of essential workers who wouldn't then be allowed to go out on strike.
Yes, and there's a small paragraph in Leo Varadkar's manifesto which makes reference to this when he says he will legislate to make Labour Court recommendations binding on employers in essential and security services
and Simon
unions.
Coveney agrees with him, we should say.
Well, from the outset, let me say what our view on that is. I think that the trade union movement will vigorously oppose any legislation which will restrict the right of workers to strike. I mean, this is not just anti-strike legislation. This is anti-worker legislation. Actually, the piece that's written there doesn't actually make sense. And indeed, Leo Varadkar was forced to give some clarification recently when there was an issue in the Journal, or RTE had a news item on it, and then to the journal.ie he made some clarification where he said, well, going to the Labour Court is voluntary anyway, so therefore it would only be after that process. Well, the holy all of that would be is, why would you agree to go into the Labour Court in a voluntary process if you knew that the outcome was going to a determination, if it went against you and you didn't like the outcome and you couldn't agree with it, that you wouldn't be able to go on strike? Well, the answer to that is you wouldn't go into the Labour Court.
So this takes the legs out from under the Labour Court.
The second
process.
Thing to say to you is that I don't know what either of them believe constitutes an essential service. But for instance, as we speak at the moment, teachers have no access into the Labour Court. Civil servants have no access into the Labour Court. The Gardaí have no access into the Labour Court. There's a whole tranche of public servants that wouldn't or couldn't be covered on that. The second thing to say to you is that when you make those pronouncements, you're automatically actually, I mean, he says in this, people should no longer be inconvenienced by strike action in essential services. You would think that the only people who had anything to do with a strike actually was workers. You take the employers as being having had nothing to do with it. You take the recent Bus Éireann dispute, which I was very heavily involved in the background on. There was massive policy failures by the Department of Transport, by the Transport Authority, all of which elongated that dispute in the first place. The workers concerned, actually, at the end of a long and getting a Labour Court recommendation and having accepted it, are going to be penalised strongly in relation to their wages, their futures and everything else. And you had the Department of Transport and a Transport Authority who took the view, not our problem, we've nothing to say about it. And in fact, actually, they did worse than nothing to say about it. They obstructed any move to try and improve the chances of getting a reasonable settlement. And that's my view on that.
But on the other side of this, Patricia, where does the public interest lie? Does the public interest not lie in retaining essential services? You may have your dispute going on one hand, but can we not come up with a way to resolve that without people walking off the job?
Well, the public interest is well served, actually, in the third party system, whereby at the moment, currently, the Labour Court has provision within the 1946 Act to operate under the public interest and call the parties in to see can a recommendation be and a settlement to be developed. We have actually a very good, successful third party system in relation to disputes. And no matter what comparisons you make, actually, the levels of strike action in the country are not high by comparisons in others. And secondly, to say to you is that you cannot end up penalising one side in a dispute by saying, actually, we will curtail your rights to exercise your entitlements to take strike action and withdraw your labour.
So what's going on in your view when you see something like this written down in a manifesto?
Well, I'll tell you, firstly, whoever wrote it didn't know a lot about industrial relations and how it operates. That's the first thing to say. I don't know who wrote it, but they don't understand that the first thing you do is you put in a policy or suggest a policy which you can have an out on in two words, which is, why bother going into the Labour Court? Just have the strike in the first place. The second thing is, if you think it out, does anyone believe that workers would accept that level of legislation imposed upon them? And if they pursue it...
What's the author trying to achieve? Yeah. That's what
well,
I want
what
to get
at. Well, what the author is trying to achieve is he's trying to put his foot on the neck of workers, and it won't be acceptable. And I can tell you, I can think of no more unifying issue among trade unionists, and there are several hundreds of thousands of trade unionists in this country. I can find or think of no more unifying issue for those people to say, no, you're not going to do this.
Joe McHugh, putting the foot on the neck of workers, and Ruth, then I'll come back to you.
Yeah, look, and I know that there's been a lot of media commentary on this as well, but it's very important to point out that this policy does not mean that there's going to be a ban on strikes. That is not what it's aiming to do. What it's aiming to do is, number one, to acknowledge the very effective industrial relations machinery that we have in this country, and also to build upon that. And even the most recent dispute Patricia was involved in, for Minister Ross to take a step back and allow that machinery to kick in and to work, it's important we learn from that. But having politicians in the middle of industrial disputes, there's lessons to be learned there as well.
But having politicians in the middle of, or rather at the beginning of new public sector pay talks saying something like this surely can't be helpful.
Look, I mean, Pascal Donoghue and Leo met with Patricia, I think, in the last 2 weeks as well. And you see the position that Pascal's even taken in relation to the Pay and Pension Commission. It's very important that politicians stand back, allow this debate to go on internally and with the various stakeholders.
Putting this in your manifesto is hardly standing back. Ruth, you share a constituency with Leo. Give us your views on this policy issue.
Yeah. Well, I think it's a little bit bizarre that after 10 years of austerity, where all workers and every person in the country has taken such a massive hit, where our services have suffered, that Leo Varadkar and Fine Gael think that this is going to be a popular policy. It is not. There is no mood in this country for attacking workers' rights. If anything, the mood is to enhance workers' rights.
Now, maybe it's not popular for the people who voted for you, but it could be very popular with the people who voted for him, and that's all he cares about.
I don't think so. I actually think that this is another, and I think that getting up early in the morning will hang around Leo Varadkar for decades to come.
But what I'm trying to say is what this competition, what this leadership competition is all about, is for people who vote for Fine Gael. It's not about people who vote for you. So if you're talking about...
I'm aware of that. But yeah, people who vote for Fine Gael are also public sector workers and are also workers. And there's no question that if something like this was introduced, it will be extended. It may start with a small group of workers. But where's this coming from? We've had very few strike days in this country over the last, 10 to 20 years. But I think that who are these emergency service workers? They're the type of workers that went to help people in the bomb blast in Manchester. they're ambulance workers, they're nurses, and it's absolutely disrespectful and outrageous for Fianna Fáil to come out, or for Fine Gael to come out with this. But Leo Varadkar also made a statement during the week about the hard left. Is Leo Varadkar the hard right? I mean, that it's something that's thrown at us. He said that the hard left are these people who want free education. I didn't think that was a terrible thing. I thought free education was a good thing. Free healthcare and the likes of Apple to pay for it. Exactly. He used it as if this was an insult. But
he also says in his manifesto, though, that he's going to increase the back-to-school clothing and footwear allowance by 50% in 2 years. He'll set a cap on voluntary contributions for parents. He'll extend the school breakfast programme to more schools, extend maternity and paternity leave and allow the parents to share that leave. And he'll also look at financial support for fertility treatment. Now, those measures, to me, don't look like hard right measures.
They're fairly paltry measures. I mean, this is a week when 30 children, 12 families, were told to go to a Garda station to get refuge, to get somewhere to sleep. And by the way, Leo Varadkar's constituency is actually probably the homeless black spot of the country, and he's never shown the slightest bit of interest in doing anything about it or visiting, you know, the areas where most people are affected. But I think it's a little bit of a false division between Simon Coveney and Leo Varadkar, because the moral compass that Simon spoke of, he's presiding over the biggest housing crisis that the state has ever seen. And when he was asked his view about curbing workers' right to strike, he said, well, it's just not the right time. So I don't think that there is this massive difference. And I think the only comfort people should take, Fine Gael can't do these things. They do not have a majority, and they cannot actually carry out any of these things.
Just a couple of points for Ruth there. Ruth saying that Leo Varadkar's not interested in the housing issue. He's part of a cabinet that ensured that $1.3 billion will be spent on housing.
He's never
done
a thing in Dublin West about the housing crisis. That's all I said.
The point being is he's part of a government that's trying to find solutions for a big, big problem. And this idea of a right and a left, and I think Leo's been very clear on this, the type of world we live in is very much, is an all-inclusive politician. He's interested in poverty targets, and that means if he becomes Taoiseach, he comes into the Dáil, the opposition question him over a period of time, have they reached the particular specific targets. Equality of the opportunity as well, wants to give everybody an opportunity, no matter what stage they're at in their life. But the big one...
And who are the people, Joe, who don't get up early in the morning?
You can develop that. It's very hard, I suppose, to get a message out if you want to include. But Leo Varadkar is including everybody in that.
Can you stop saying "look" when you don't want to answer a question? No, it's something the politicians do.
Claire's asked me,
who did he mean? Who did he mean?
He means everybody. He means people with disabilities. He means people with carers. For example, women or fathers who decide to stay at home to look after their children.
Who did he mean isn't getting up in the morning, though?
No, he didn't. He's on about the people who should be rewarded for effort, and effort comes
all
at different
know what
levels.
He meant. Let me finish,
Ruth. He's also talking about the coping classes, and politician.
Another disgraceful phrase. The classes that aren't coping, like the homeless, don't matter to Fine Gael.
The coping classes.
Is
people
a
who work,
phrase?
People who work hard. 2 million people are now working, but that doesn't mean we sit back and say 2 million people are working and everything's grand. There's a lot of people working out there, still find it hard. The bills are still coming through the door. They have education fees. They have a lot of pressures on.
Joe,
so it's about trying to spread the load to make it easier.
10 years ago, there was full
them.
Employment in this country, right? Virtual full employment in this country during the boom.
Yeah, and there was nearly 16% unemployment in 2009.
Exactly. Now, so the people who you talk about that aren't coping are the people who've lost their jobs, largely because of the bank bailout and policies that you pursued. Well, it's a continual phrase that Fine Gael peddles,
and it shouldn't be. Could I just ask, I think there is an issue about the judgment of making the statement that he made, that was made in relation to the whole industrial relations and the legislation and so on. Do they not take cognizance of the fact that there is an agreed code of practice in relation to the provision of essential service by all public servants in the event of a strike? There's a code of practice about cover. Mm. That's the first thing to say. The second thing to say is the actual public service agreement that and the three of them previously, or two of them previously that existed, all of them had two features. One, an industrial peace clause, and two, binding arbitration if there was a dispute within the confines of that agreement. Now, why would any politician if they had any regard for those sort of details, which are very important when you're going to write a statement like that, why would you want to do that unless you're pandering to a right-wing element that you want to attract their vote?
Okay,
why would you do that?
Maybe Frank Flannery would be able to explain to us why it was said.
Well, I would draw, this is a very interesting discussion and just shows how interesting and effective a politician many way Leo Varadkar is. He has a sharpness and a keenness about him, and he has a very strong attitude towards society, which is very modern, very universalist.
As Jack, a texter, says, advising Leo Varadkar? He says rumours are that Frank Flannery is advising Leo Varadkar.
I haven't had any such pleasure to advise him. I've just seen his documentation in its printed form. I would point out that this is entitled a political ideas paper, not a manifesto for government or even a manifesto for Fine Gael. And a leader is one person in an organisation, is one person in a party who participates with all the other people in that party and allied parties in the final formulation of policy. So this is an ideas debate to a very large extent. But what Leo has is a very strong feeling for the private sector and the middle class people and the people who are now very, very, very heavily taxed in Ireland, and that's everybody, public and private sector, in their struggles coming out of the recession to get their lives back onto a reasonable keel. And he thinks about them and he talks about them. And it's against that ground he has a very, very strong focus. And mind you, it's amazing to which the extent to which the very large left-wing groupings in Irish politics, which are probably in a majority one way or another at all times now, find that kind of thinking rather difficult.
I have to take a break in the interest of fairness, because Joe, you're going to leave us now, and Marcella Corcoran-Kennedy, who's supporting Simon Coveney, is going to join us. We'll be back with more after this. Welcome back to the programme. We've been joined by Marcella Corcoran-Kennedy, Fine Gael Minister of State for Health Promotion. You're very welcome, and Simon Coveney supporter. And we're going to talk about the fascinating tug of love over your affections in just a moment. But before we do, I want to talk to Ruth Coppinger about the abortion committee. The Oireachtas Abortion Committee, Ruth, will have 21 members on there to assess the Citizens' Assembly recommendations of last month. You have an issue with it. Why?
Well, there's been a move now to change the rules so that to stop substitution if a TD can't attend or replacement.
And why is that an issue for the Solidarity Party?
Well, the reason it's an issue, it's hitting at small parties that only have one position. So, for example, if a TD was sick or, you know, a car accident or whatever, cannot be replaced, you lose your position. But also, it's also effectively hitting at the pro-choice groups, because there's a group of senators in the civic engagement group who wanted to share, who all three have a history and a record on fighting for, you know, women's rights, abortion rights, etc., who wanted to share playing a role. And now they're not going to be able to do it, and neither will we.
So you wanted to share that position with Breed Smith. Was that the plan?
Exactly.
And you've been told that you can't do that.
Yeah.
Is that end of the road then, or can you appeal that
decision? Going to be a vote on Wednesday in the Dáil, and we're going to be appealing to parties to recognise the spirit of new politics, which is a recognition that there are a lot more fragmented and smaller groups, and who share speaking time, who've come together. And this is just a continuation of that. And we would not do anything to jeopardise this committee. This is an issue we care about, that we fought on. In the case of Solidarity and People for Profit, we're the only fully pro-choice grouping in the Dáil. We have two parties that have an interest and a record on this, and we wanted to share it.
Okay.
And we just feel that, why is this being done? I mean, surely
Is this particular to this committee?
Yeah. Now, they are allowed change rules of special committees, but I don't see any need for this. Like, they talked about that in the banking inquiry, that they'd very tight rules. This isn't the banking inquiry. You know, this is to look at the Citizens' Assembly proposals and how that they might be enacted. And I think that they should be looking at the parties who are literally herding TDs and forcing them onto it. We actually want to be on it.
Yeah, there are claims that Fine Gael had to compel at least two people to take part in that
and
committee.
And also, this was meant to be established before Easter, and there doesn't seem to be any onus or burden on the two big parties who broke the rules in a way by not actually giving their names in.
I don't want to spend too long on this, but Marcella, do you have a view on that? And should, do you think, the Solidarity PPP party be allowed to share the position on the committee?
Well, first of all, this recommendation came from the business committee, which they're represented on anyway. And there are other small groupings that are on that. And they made a recommendation that, number one, the number on the on the new committee be increased from 20 to 21. They reduce the number of TDs and increase the number of senators. So that's the proposal that should be coming before the Dáil next week to vote on, because the original motion had different figures there. So again, this is coming from the business committee. This is not coming from any individual party.
Would you have a problem though with Breed Smith and Ruth Coppinger sharing?
The fact of the matter is that this is not like any other committee, because it's only going to serve for 3 months, and they will have to elect their own chair. They'll set out their work programme, but they do have a very tight time frame. And to be perfectly honest, my experience of working on committees, I was on the Environment Committee, I was on the Justice Committee, and I chaired the Jobs Committee. And, you know, people performed differently on each of the committees in terms of their attendance, whether they were interested in the issues or they weren't. The fact of the matter is that if you want to have a really good committee, you need people who will come every single week to it. And I would urge people who are going on that committee to commit to it fully. I mean, if you wanted to be talking about fairness, the bigger parties could say, well, actually, we aren't represented adequately enough at all on that committee, in that all of the groupings are represented, have one people. But if you look at, say, Ruth's grouping, there are six TDs there. Fine Gael have 57, yet we have only six and she gets one. So
but you couldn't get people
negotiated
to go on the committee. You
no,
to force
that's actually
two people
a myth.
To go on.
That is absolutely not true. We have a great team going on that committee. We have two senators, Catherine Noone and Jerry Buttimer, great experienced people. And we have Kate O'Connell, Peter Fitzpatrick, we have Bernard Durkin, and we have Hildegard Nocton. So we have very experienced people. And what's more,
all
we
of whom volunteered
them
to go on that committee.
Yes, and what's more, we trust them.
Is that true?
We actually trust them to work on that committee on our behalf.
Is that the case?
Trust is very important in this.
I would say that there was definitely a tug of love in terms of who wanted to go on that committee, but I can't honestly say whether or not Hildegard in particular asked to be on. But I know with a lot of people, I was talking to Jerry Buttimer about this, it was difficult to get people to sit on it. And that's because it's such a divisive issue. But I mean, I think people, including myself, would have been quite sceptical on the Citizens' Assembly when it was first established, because we thought that this debate would probably be best done by politicians. But actually, look what's happened now. The Citizens' Assembly have come up with some very interesting proposals after a lot of thought and talk about it, and the politicians are making a hames of it. And I think the biggest mistake about the Citizens' Assembly was the fact that no political table was introduced. If you had had 10 representatives, or even your 21 that you have in the committee now, sitting in the debate, we would realise how far of a journey the people at the Assembly have taken. I mean, a lot of the people starting out would have been incredibly pro-life, if you want to put it that way. And can I make one point? Are you in a rush?
Yeah, no, we want to move on to Simon Coveney, but go ahead. Yeah, just a quick one.
If you look, for example, at what Leo Varadkar and Simon Coveney have already said on abortion during this leadership debate, they're talking about rape. So they would both be relatively comfortable with the idea of a woman having an abortion here if she has been raped. That is an issue that the Citizens' Assembly has decided is impossible to legislate for. So that's why you have this idea of a 12-week no-reason abortion. Now, they have both said that they don't want abortion on demand, and I kind of put that in quotes. But the Citizens' Assembly has teased all of these issues out to an extraordinary level of detail, and yet the politicians are coming into this cold. Now, in fairness, we don't have a report yet, and they will be basing their work on that.
Okay.
But they seem to think that they're starting all over again.
All right. Marcella, I want to come to you about the leadership issue, because it is fascinating. Leo Varadkar said on his way into Cabinet last week that you just might change your mind when you saw what was in his health manifesto. Any chance of that happening?
Well, I suppose it would be helpful if you want somebody to change their mind that you might ask them first. I signed the nomination paper for Simon Coveney, and I was very happy to do it. I believe Simon has great vision for the party and great vision for the country. And he set out his stall very clearly over the last week, and in particular at the hustings. You know, I mean, Simon's experience is really extensive. You know, he's a great vote getter. He's won 5 general elections. He was elected as an MEP. to the European Parliament, and his expertise in negotiation was really put to the test when he was the Minister for Agriculture in terms of negotiating CAP and fisheries reform. So I believe that he is certainly the best person, best placed for the job, because remember, we're facing into Brexit, hugely challenging time for us as a country. In fact, the biggest challenge facing us in a generation, I would say. And I firmly believe that he is certainly the best man for the job. He has the expertise to do it.
He did say last week that he was concerned for the political futures of those who backed him if it was going to go Leo's way. Did you back the wrong horse? Are you worried?
Well, first of all, I have made no secret of the fact that I'm friendly with both of them, and it was a very hard decision to make. But having said that, when I weighed it up, when I weighed on balance what both of them had to say about their vision for the future of the party and the country, I came down on Simon's side, and I must say I haven't regretted it. I still believe he's the best person to lead the party and the best person to be Taoiseach of this country. And I think the fact that he has really shown his determination and his tenacity and his actual leadership skills in the last week, in the face of a tide going against him, he really resoundingly faced it down, and he has stimulated a debate, and it has been an incredibly exciting week for members of Fine Gael to be attending rallies, to attend the hustings, and it has absolutely energised the party. And Simon Coveney has been a huge part of that in terms of him actually taking the initiative and having those rallies. In terms of our futures, well look, that's all speculation, but at the end of the day I would like to think that people will be considered in terms of their talent, their work rate and their constituency.
Okay, so will people change their minds, do you think, in the parliamentary party and switch to Simon, given the events of the week and the hustings over the weekend?
In politics, anything is possible. I'm a veteran of the Shannon election. I ran in 2007. And when I sat down at the end of the day and looked at the promises that I was made and what actually came out of the ballot box, I had a rude awakening. So at the end of the day, this ballot is in fact private. I believe that a huge work will be undertaken and has been undertaken. And I do believe that there are people who will be persuaded and convinced, because the bottom line is that Simon has been absolutely clear on this, was that the process needs to be seen to the end. There was a very strong feeling at the rallies earlier in the week by the membership, who felt very cross that they were going to be excluded, because there seemed to be some suggestion that Simon wouldn't continue with the campaign. And of course, again,
well,
as I say,
they were excluded because all of you made up your mind so quickly, and you know the 65% was done practically before they got a chance to even hear what those candidates were saying.
Absolutely right, but the fact of the matter is that in order to become a candidate you need nomination, so I nominated Simon, so therefore I had to be public about my declaration, and really that's something that Fine Gael were going to have to look at in the future, I believe, in that 8 nominations is all that's required to be a candidate. The process was then that the hustings would take place, and subsequent to that the people would make their minds up. We're voting actually at the end, the membership will start voting. And Simon has been absolutely clear that he wanted the debate, he wanted the discussion, and he wanted everybody to hear their vision for the party and the vision for the country.
Actually, there's a question. Will we know how the membership and councillors have voted before the parliamentary party votes?
No, but the count will take place on the same day, and we'll know the result from each constituency, if you know what I mean. And that will obviously, as Frank was saying, be a first in terms of the parliamentary party. Yeah. I suppose in terms of how Simon Coveney can potentially do, I mean, if you look at the Irish Times tracker at the moment, I think Leo Varadkar's on 46%. He probably only needs another 5% to win. Even if Simon Coveney were to get some of the big guns from Cabinet, like the Taoiseach, the Finance Minister, and say Michael Creed, who hasn't declared yet, he might get another 4 or 5%, and then he would have to win kind of 80 to 90% of the grassroots and a significant number of the councillors as well. So that just looks like a mountain too high to climb. But he got considerable support in the room last night when he made that point about the fact that the hustings should take place perhaps on the first day. So maybe you could retune the rules and perhaps allow people to kind of enter the race and then get nominations after, if the person has proved themselves at the debate level. But it's a difficult nut to crack, because at the same time, you don't want people going forward if they don't have a hope and kind of stealing the potential votes from other people, because this probably wouldn't have arisen if there had been a third candidate in the field like the Taoiseach or Pascal Donoghue.
Yeah, it would have been probably a better event if you had three strong candidates or even four.
Yeah.
I could see it working better. Two is edgy. When you have two very strong candidates edging up against one another, 4 nights in a row for about 3 hours, that's a task and a challenge to put to everybody. So it'll be to their great credit if they get to the end of it without beating their heads off one another. But I would say the spirit, going back to what you said, Claire, the spirit of this process is openness. And I would have thought, I don't actually know, I possibly shouldn't have, I don't, that the result of the different colleges will also be made known. So that how the party members voted, I think the party members would be interested in knowing that. How the
do you know, Marcella,
how the council
we'll
has
know.
Voted and how the parliamentary party.
We've been told it's my understanding that 65% obviously is the parliamentary party, 25% is the membership, and 10% goes to the councillors. Yeah. And I would have thought certainly that my information is that the each of the winners of the whichever candidate wins the electoral college, we will know that from the colleges. So that'll be very interesting to see, and it's a great opportunity, as I say, for the membership to come out and make their feelings known, because they have had an opportunity to submit questions to the candidates, and the debates have been really positive. But as I say again, it's a first, and so clearly the challenge for the next time will be to figure out, you know, what will improve this process, because it is one that is here to stay, okay, as far as I can see.
All right, we'll take a quick break and we'll come back with more after this. Just for those of you who are interested in such things, we read in the papers today that there were mock debates that happened so that the different candidates could practice. And Pascal Donoghue played Simon Coveney for a mock debate, we hear, with Leo. And Simon Harris played Leo for Simon Coveney. That's the debate I want to see. Really and truly, that is the one I want to see. Ivan Yates writing today says the Fine Gael contest doesn't provide adequate or credible authority for the next Taoiseach, that we should have a general election.
Wow, yeah. I mean, that is something that you could see. I think there will be, no matter who wins it, there will be a considerable new kind of party leader boon in relation to the opinion polls. We've already seen Fine Gael doing better according to this weekend's opinion poll. It's very tempting for a party leader when they see that figure, particularly if they were to get anywhere near tipping close to 40%. And that's something that, like, I can see Frank's eyes already kind of rolling in the back of his head with the idea the party could be back there. But obviously at the moment, as you've seen from what Ruth was saying earlier about the abortion committee, I mean, new politics has a very long way to go in terms of how it's working at the moment. And if a politician thought they could get anything close to a kind of a working majority coalition to get away from the minority coalition, I think they'd absolutely do it. And obviously, as we were saying earlier, Leo Varadkar or Simon Coveney have problems with inheritance in terms of whatever cabinet they get. They'll be able to have a complete clean slate. They'll also be able to put their stamp on the new members of the party. You know, they'll be able to say there's a cohort of people that they brought through the ranks, and that's obviously something that will be very refreshing.
Patricia, and then we'll come to
I just was interested earlier on there, just as we were coming to one of the breaks, Frank made the point that, you know, candidates are very tuned in to the middle class and have empathy with the issues that are going on for those people. But I wouldn't have any comment to make at all about a Fine Gael leadership election. But the point is that whichever of these candidates win, it could be the Taoiseach of the country. And that means that they have to leave the country, and that they must have empathy with everybody in the country. And we have maybe an economy that's growing and has grown and so on, but the holy all of it is on foot of 8 to 10 years austerity. We have a very fractured society.
So are you in favour of an election then, given that we're just starting pay talks?
I'm not going to say anything about a general election. All I want, the point I want to get across is that whoever becomes leader of this party, also that brings leadership of the country, as in the Taoiseach, in the framework we're working in at the moment. And I have very strong worries about this emphasis on the middle classes and what their issues are. This person will lead the country. There are, as Marcella has said earlier, very big challenges, Brexit being one of them, the housing crisis being another. It's not a housing crisis, it's a housing emergency. And we whoever leads the country is going to have to develop empathy with all people in the country and all the issues that are going on. And actually, the issue arising in in relation to the labour legislation and the anti-strike. That's very worrying, because that means either they don't understand the consequences of doing that, or they don't care what the consequences are, and they will roll on to actually give something to what they regard are the middle classes. And I think that's very dangerous.
Marcella?
Well, I feel very strongly that the person to lead the country, I think, would be Simon Coveney. And they're going to have a challenge, though, when either of them, because they're going to have to negotiate with the opposition and with the Independent Alliance, well, particularly Fianna Fáil and the Independent Alliance. I mean, the programme for government is quite clear. It's there for three budgets. That's what Fianna Fáil signed up for, and the Independent Alliance. So they're certainly going to have to do that. It's speculation as to whether they'll call a snap election, but I can tell you, if Simon Coveney is there, he gets things done, and he'll be one who would put the country first if he is Taoiseach.
So Leo Varadkar would be more likely to call a snap election. Simon Coveney will carry on.
Look, this is speculation, but I know from Simon Coveney's track record, he's somebody who gets things done. He's somebody that I want to see as Taoiseach, and I know that he'll put the country first, because his whole vision is about uniting Ireland.
Right. May not be their choice. It could be up to Fianna Fáil, and the money is in the back
end. It's all about negotiating
at the
end of
this particular term. I mean, the money, Patricia King would have heard at the pay talks this week, the Department of Finance and the Department of Deeper were both outlining how dire it looks in terms of next year. There's only 200 million available for the type of pay increases that Patricia King would want for her workers. So it actually might be an idea to kind of go in before Fianna Fáil gets to drag the whole thing down. And that's something they'll have to be very careful of watching as soon as the new Taoiseach gets in.
And I would say the present model of government is a very weak model of government. Let's be realistic about that. It has done okay to get as far as it's gone. And one would say it's well set to get through another budget as well. I think there's enough consensus
there.
I think it works as a cohesive unit. It's just so dependent on Fianna Fáil to get stuff done. Makes it an extremely difficult model of government. Slow, you know, rather tedious in the way it works and so on. It's not built for the long term.
Yeah.
But I would say...
The strategy, though, around somebody going in there, say it's Leo Varadkar,
it's the next
honeymoon period,
next,
go for it in
next
October.
Next government we have to focus on. And I think the result of this hustings has been an enormous energising of the Fine Gael organisation countrywide. In every sense of the word, politically, in terms of their ideas generation, in terms of their confidence, and in terms of their ambition for the country. Strong, wide visions have been developed and created. So I would think that the next leader of Fine Gael is also leader of the country, so has the task of maximising the output and trying to develop the second phase of this partnership government being stronger and more effective than its first phase.
So election,
but they've
or
learned
not?
A lot in the first year. I would think you will have an election, but you're going to get, I would have thought, at least another year out of the existing model. Then you're coming near, Fianna Fáil has put a natural life of about 3 years on this one. They talked about three budgets, and they speak about being committed to three budgets. That may very well happen, but the nearer you get to the third budget, the more then you're into.
I'd say the danger zone is sometime
into
around
when
February,
it's going
March
to happen.
Next year.
And okay. Fine Gael has to, and the same with Plaid Fianna Fáil and the other parties, they have to re-energise their party, get totally focused, get an election strategy in place, get enough money in the bank to fight elections. That costs a great, and all of that can be done with a real energised effort, dynamic leadership in 6 months. Definitely. I've that experience in the past myself. Can be done in 6 months. So I would say this government is good until the end of the year, good for another budget. I'd say next spring you could very well have an election. And if I was going to Paddy Power, I'd say by this time next year we'd have a new government in place.
Marcella, just before we came on air, I saw the Journal running a story saying that the campaign for Leo website was registered in September 2016. Do you think now, looking back over the last week, that... Simon was just too slow getting out of the traps here, and that Leo had it all sewn up?
Not at all, I don't think so. You know, elections are very hard to predict. You don't know what way things are going to go.
You know, the stickers, the bottled water, the cupcakes.
Yes.
It was all very slick, wasn't it?
Well, look, at the end of the day, everybody has to run their own campaign. As far as I'm concerned, Simon Coveney is the best man for the job, and I'm urging members of Fine Gael to give him their number one when they get the opportunity to vote. I think he's the best man for the role of leader of Fine Gael and Taoiseach.
And have you identified colleagues in the parliamentary party who are for turning?
Well... shall we say, we're working on it.
Simon Coveney, actually, which was way more slick, I thought, than the bottles of water, had a newsletter on every chair in the Red Cow Hotel in Dublin. And it had the star signs at the back. It did a fake crossword and everything that had kind of funny answers. But the crosswords, when you read Leo, you know, for the star sign Leo, it obviously said that a disappointment was coming down the line. It was very, very, very well put together. I've managed to get through this campaign so far without touching anything that says Leo Varadkar in an effort to be, you know, unbiased and not eat cupcakes for one member and not
eat. This is really about a vision for Ireland. And I think that Simon is the best man to deliver that. I mean, he's got such a track record, and I think his vision for uniting Ireland, I think, is something really interesting. Okay. And his whole emphasis on climate change.
Well, just to clarify how the results will be announced, Fine Gael have been on to us to say that they hope that this is how it will work, that the vote of the membership will be announced, and then the councillors' vote will be announced, and then the parliamentary party will be announced on Friday before 6 o'clock. Fianna Fáil want us to clarify that Fianna Fáil submitted their 5 representatives to the Committee on the 8th Amendment before Easter, so that's that done. And Michelle is pointing the finger at me, saying, why have I stacked my show with 2 Leo supporters in Joe McHugh and Frank Flannery to 1 for Simon Coveney?
The 1 is better than the 2 put together.
There you go. I'm glad you got the opportunity to answer
vote
that.
Number
yourself.
1, Simon.
All right. We'll be back here and we'll have a new leader of Fine Gael next Saturday when we're on air. In the meantime, I hope you can join me on Monday night on RT1 at 10:35. Thank you for being with us over the course of the last hour. Have a great weekend.
Saturday with Clare Byrne was produced by Kay Sheehy. The broadcast coordinator was David Phelan. The researchers are Annette Egan and John Riley. And sound supervision was by Sheila Neville.